Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hey guys, it's JVL and Sarah with a little preview of the secret show here for our Next Level friends.
I've heard a lot of people say last week's Next Level was like one of their favorite ones.
People come up to me on last week's or this week's or
Last Friday's. I think it was because you and I were really like thinking out loud, grappling with things, and
secret, not the Next Level. Yeah, the secret. Yeah,
no, the secret pod. And I think that is
people liked it.
I think this is a time for grappling. So, if you want to do more of that, we're going to do more of it today. We're going to grapple with JVL's, what did you put a gimp in the closet or something? Anyway,
I was the gimp.
Sure.
I was the gimp. The gimp is me.
I had to look it up.
All right, guys.
Come join us.
Hello, everyone. This is JVL here with my best friend, Sarah Longwell, publisher of The Bulwark. Sarah, welcome back.
Thank you. I was traveling.
Very, very bravely choosing to not eat during this podcast.
I know. It's so
although I think great. I think you should just do it. I don't see any reason why not. We're all family here.
Okay.
But that's your choice. So you would like to rap me on the knuckles with a ruler over something I wrote, and I am here to take my medicine.
Okay. I guess I'll read you the part of your triad because I did read it. I read it in part because many people said it to me with a, like, what the hell? So I took a look at it. Actually, that's not true. I had read it on my own.
Well, you were cooped up in an airplane.
Yeah.
What other choices did you have?
Yeah. And so the part, and it's very early on, you kind of just lead with this. You say, moving on. I need to get something off my chest. There is part of me that hopes Trump's $15 billion lawsuit against the New York Times is successful. And I thought, what is this lunatic talking about?
Well, that's part of the journey. That's the hook. That's how you get readers invested in the piece, Sarah.
Yeah.
Which size part?
What was the size part
of me that I said?
You said it was either 3% or 5%. So I understand that percentage is low. But you did go on then to sort of, I don't know if you want to explain your point or you want me to explain the point as I read it. But it was the editor of the Times.
Executive editor.
Executive editor explaining what he saw as the role of the New York Times, leading into the election, which I don't know if you want to read part of that or if we're just going to discuss it, but do you want to paraphrase it?
I can paraphrase it. So last year, Joe Kahn sat down for an interview with Ben Smith of Semaphore, and Ben said to him, you know, a lot of people are asking, like, why can't the New York Times just be on the side of democracy? And Joe Kahn gave a long answer in which he proposed that to do that would mean turning the Times into a propaganda arm like Pravda, his words. He said that because Trump was not the sitting president, there was a good chance that it would be a free and fair election, which is an astonishing thing to say. because the complimentary thing to draw from that is that he believes that if Trump had been the sitting president, we might not have a free and fair election. But then he went on to say that democracy is just one issue among many, and it's not even the thing that most people care about. Most people care about, if you look at the polls, immigration and inflation. And so what I said was, first of all, this is a false choice. You don't the options aren't. We present everything with our eyes closed as if both sides are the same and we have no idea what the reality is, or we're Fox, you could do what The Atlantic does, right? The Atlantic, I think, is just a very responsible news organization, which is openly on the side of democracy. They don't apologize for it. Like, this is, we're in this for the team. The team is democracy. And I mean, I don't think I need to go and rehearse all of my complaints with the Times coverage, but in general, they would choose framings for headlines that were helpful to Trump. And even today, there's a, I'll just read you the headline. Trump administration wields its full toolbox to bring media to heel. ABC's decision to indefinitely suspend Jimmy Kimmel's late night talk show eliminates the administration's efficacy so far. Like, that's a choice. But the point of the piece is about solidarity, and that when you're confronting authoritarian movements, you don't get to pick and choose your allies and the people you stand with. And some of the people you stand with are going to be people that you really like and are very aligned with on lots of things. And some of them are going to not be. Some of them are going to be people who whose judgment you don't like, whose preferences you don't share. And that's to get hung up on that sort of narcissism, which is what I was accusing myself of, narcissism, is dangerous. And so the whole point of the piece was that what I led with, that 3 to 5% of me that was kind of rooting for the Trump lawsuit, is really bad and needs to be excised, because we need to treat this whole thing like it's Article 5 of NATO. An attack on any one of us is an attack on all of us. And we, here again, staring into the mirror, meaning JVL, need to get over ourselves and be in solidarity with everybody, including Joe Kahn in the New York Times. So that's the 30-second version of the piece.
Yeah. So I'll tell you the issue I have with it, which is it came as the New York Times they fought Trump on his $15 billion lawsuit, made him take it to court.
And God bless him for it.
And it got thrown out.
It did. Well, it's been kicked back. The judge
is basically like, he's like, this is nonsense. And so if you want to bring this lawsuit, like, bring me something serious. But they didn't even for a second. They're not bargaining like Harvard. Like Harvard, who looked like it was going to stand up. Like, the institutional surrender has been so complete. Complete. I mean, you do have some law firms that stood up.
And widespread.
And good on you. Good on you. But yeah. In terms of the media companies, they have been some of the worst actors. And we are in a moment right now, which I actually want to talk about at greater length, but where CBS and ABC, I mean, they're not just capitulating to Trump. They are looking for ways to be more on side with him, the same way that Bezos and Zuckerberg and Elon. I mean, guys, the extent to which Trump and his allies and his converted allies are now going to own the vast majority of the country's legacy and mainstream media. It is
new media platforms.
Which one? What do you mean new? Like, because it's free press? I mean,
Twitter.
Oh,
Meta,
right. New media. Right.
And TikTok.
Yes. Yes.
And so, not just TikTok. The media, but the platform streams, the platform
That's
information
right.
streams.
And it is both corrupt.
We don't know about TikTok, but
we're waiting for TikTok to come down. But like, if that deal goes through, as we did talk about this on the next level, like the level of corruption, of wealth generation for Trump's allies, using the state, the level of capitulation, the level of with the FCC going after Kimmel, and ABC looking like it is, and Disney looking like they're going to let them, like, guys, this is like Bob Iger. This is, and they used to fight. They fought Ron DeSantis, and now they are going to roll over for Trump. And the New York Times didn't. It feels like a weird day to hit the New York Times who is maybe one of the most significant, you know, sort of institutional actors to stand up to Trump. And I guess I just sometimes, and I, look, this is a little bit of a tough one in part because people are always doing this to us, or certainly to me, where they're like, Sarah, how can you be mad at Joe Biden when this authoritarianism is at your door? And so I guess I'm not trying to be like, we, you know, you should only talk about the big threats. But I guess I just, in a moment of them doing the right thing, I don't think it, I don't think the idea that like standing with them in solidarity is something where you have to hold your nose. And also, I think you and I just fundamentally disagree on how I think that most of the mainstream media has failed to meet the moment with Donald Trump. I think they have really been at a loss as to how to approach someone who does not deal in truth. Like, because I agree with you actually on the merits of like Trump uses tools in his toolbox. Yeah. Like that's an insane headline because those are actually not tools in his toolbox. No. He's not supposed to use them. They're off limits. They're in his murder bag. Like a toolbox is like a good thing you have. Like it's over here in like the, I'm going to do murder with this kit. And like, we should be like, why is he in his murder kit? That's not allowed. And so like they do often, I think, fall prey to something that, and you know, I've had my own dealings with them at like the Deal Book Summit where I was sitting there like, are we just going to let these guys lie like this? And I have to be quiet. So like, some of that is noted, but I think as an institution, they also have probably run more headlines from more people and more contributors who have called out what Trump is doing over the course of this time, done some of the best reporting. Like Maggie Haberman, because I just did a video on this last week, in that press pool room, like when the press was, the number of people who were like, Mr. President, now that you've made DC so much safer and me and my family personally feel like we could walk down the streets again, could you just answer the question of why are you so great, sir? And this was on the heels of the Epstein stuff coming out, on the heels of him having clearly lied about Epstein. And the only reporter that asked about it for real and followed up was Maggie Haberman. And so no
argument from me.
The idea that we would, maybe it's because I can't connect with the 3-5% that would want the New York Times to lose that lawsuit. I do not want that. There's no part of me. It would be horrific.
I can't explain why you don't have that. Well, because you're a good person.
I don't think it's just that. I think
pretty sure that's what it is. Like almost by definition, it's because you're a good person.
It's because
I'm fallen, Sarah.
No, okay. I just there's no part of me that ever roots for Trump in these scenarios. Like I root for these organizations to give us their best. And like the New York Times is doing that right now with fighting in the way that nobody else has. Like even Harvard, who we were initially very excited to see that they were pushing back, has been like kind of wobbly and has been like, if we could trade you this for this. New York Times was unequivocal. And I think that, I kind of thought that it was a mark. I thought that was a missed mark.
Fair enough. I'm just saying, again, for me, this isn't about the New York Times. It's about me and my worst angels. It's about me taking the bad wolf and strangling him.
I don't know. You needed to call that guy a prig, which, what are you? A 18th century British, what is, who calls somebody a prig with a G?
What it means like super fastidious, and that's, I'm not calling him a prick.
It's not like it's not a British word for prick?
No.
Oh. Well.
Is that what you were upset about? You thought I called Joe Kahn a prick? I called him a prig. One of these guys who's like supercilious and fastidious.
I don't know. I don't know this person. But I felt
I don't
like
either.
It was just like
just
name
read his words. That's all. I mean, calling somebody a prig is name call-y. But it's name call-y in a, I think, fairly civilized way. Saying he's fastidious and supercilious.
Okay. Well, every now and then I have a wide vocabulary, but every now and then there's just a word that all my life I have assumed was like just a British word for prick.
I used a word in this that I could not tell you how to pronounce. M-I-E-N, which is a word that I have written.
Mien.
I don't know. Maybe. Mien. Mean. Mien. Yeah. I don't know. This is it happens to all of us, right? Like, I know what it means, but I can't tell you how to say it. Yeah. No, for me, it is about our duties to get out of our own way. And this is how you get to like anti-Trumpism, right? Is that you look at some Democrat, you hate Democrats, and you're like, am I going to have to vote for Kamala Harris? I'm not going to do that. I'm going to make up 50 reasons why actually she's just as bad as Joe Biden. And like I said, it's narcissism. It's putting yourself at the center of reality. And I felt myself creeping down that path. And I thought maybe other people are feeling similar types of situations in this moment. And so I could wrap my own knuckles and explain why those feelings were bad and why people should be in solidarity behind the New York Times, whatever their feelings about them. I'm not calling them history's greatest monsters. The guy I'm mostly quibbling with is Joe Kahn. The content of the articles is quite... Jonathan Swan is great. Maggie Haberman's great. Peter Baker's great. They got a ton of talented people over there. Carlos Lozada is great. But, you know, like any large organization, it's not perfect. There's a bunch of things I would do differently. And I do think that Kahn's fundamental conception of there only being two choices, that you either have to play everything totally straight and pretend that democracy is just like marginal tax rates, or you become Pravda, I think that's bananas.
Sure.
And I think there are not plenty, but there are several very, very smart high-level editors like Jeff Goldberg who have navigated this moment in a way that is much wiser.
Name somebody besides Goldberg.
Well, now you're putting me on the spot. I don't know who the overall executive editor of the Financial Times is, but the Financial Times has been absolutely unflinching.
That's true, actually.
Over the course of this whole like 8-year, 9-year saga.
I guess this is sort of my
Bloomberg
point, though. I mean, again, behind a paywall.
Totally.
And for a very rarefied audience. And I guess this is like the Wall Street Journal. Let's take the Wall Street Journal. They have had a million editorials by some of just the worst Trump apologists. Like they are just their editorial page, Kimberly Strassel, like these guys. And yet their news side has broken some news and probably is the only one who's even come close to the New York Times in breaking news that has been damaging. The exception, you're right, The Atlantic has broke some good things, but like
sensational.
But I guess my point is like, there's not a lot of like, there's a reason that, you know, why Trump is mad at the New York Times, like why he's suing them? Because they endorsed Kamala Harris.
Because he cares. He really cares about
it. He really cares what the New York Times thinks. Yeah. But the fact that they endorsed Kamala Harris is like why he thinks that he can sue them for, I think, defamation or, you know, and it's like which led me to believe also that I suspect the LA Times and the Washington Post who got backed off their normal process, that like phone calls were made. Because they pulled them so like everybody was caught off guard and like they did it. And then they immediately added new conservatives to their, editorial boards and everything, like the LA Times added Scott Jennings. And so like people are rushing to curry favor with Trump.
I don't want to,
in the beggars can't be choosers. Like we are sort of right now sort of desperate for some of these big American institutions to stand totally. Up. And they did. Like, they still, when everybody else buckled under the pressure on the endorsements, they still issued an endorsement. I'm not defending everything the New York Times has ever done. I'm just like, to me, standing in solidarity with the New York Times shouldn't be like the greatest chore on earth. It's not like,
I didn't say it was the greatest chore on earth,
but that is sort of the point of it, is that like these, like, I guess to me, it seems like I understand people's frustration with the New York Times. Not always. I really understand the frustration. I share it that the New York Times, or in the words of that guy, don't quite see the distinction between both sides, like the politics of it all versus like the central, like they are being attacked now because Donald Trump does not believe in the freedom of speech.
Right.
He doesn't believe in the central tenets of democracy, pluralism, rule of law, freedom of speech. He denies those things. And I wish the New York Times prosecuted that. And I also think they've backed off over the years. Like, I think they used to prosecute it more aggressively than they do now, because everybody's trying to figure out what it means to live in this world. Because, like, one of the things that guy said, and I sort of understand what these guys, I think they're wrong, but if I can explain what I think they're trying to do, is they're saying this guy won the popular vote. And in that, he was projecting forward. He was like, you know, there's a really good chance Donald Trump wins the popular vote. And, you know, that means that a lot of Americans like want this. And this is actually what happened at the Deal Book Summit, which was Kellyanne Conway and Kevin McCarthy were shouting at me, essentially, with the American people on their backs. Like, they were saying, how dare you suggest that Donald Trump did anything? The American people just spoke. The American people told you they wanted this. And I'll tell you, in the world that I oftentimes am traversing, like in democracy world, that's why people really felt like they got that was the gut punch of it all. Donald Trump winning the popular vote meant that the majority of Americans, or not a plurality, and it was not a full majority, but more for Donald Trump, more than not. And so I think people grapple with that. They grapple with, well, what do you, like, are we out of touch? Are we the ones who can't see what Americans like about this? Now, I understand getting your faith shaken a little bit like that. Actually, that's not quite true. I can see it. I don't understand it because it's like the opposite of what we do, right? Like, our job is to see clearly. Like, because what I said back to Kevin McCarthy and Kellyanne Conway at that moment was, because you lie to them. Like, the American people, you told them an election was stolen. You told them that you were going to lower grocery prices on day one. Like, you tell them lies. And so it's not as the, so are they
you're
guilty
in favor of free speech?
Yeah, you say that you're going to be the free speech. Right. Like, you lie to them. I just think, like, in the world of bad actors, the New York Times is one of the lead, is not just not among the worst, but is often also quite a good actor. And I don't feel the need to kick them in their moment of really standing up.
Okay. I want to say this very clearly, because this is a case where you are absolutely right. In the unit, if we're going to make the list of the top 1,000 bad actors, the New York Times doesn't make that list. But they occupy such an important position in American society that we need them to be better. I have written a dozen pieces over the last 3 years, 4 years, criticizing the New York Times for various things. And every time people are like, that's it, I'm canceling my subscription. And I say, don't. We don't. The idea isn't to cancel your subscription to the New York Times. We don't need the New York Times to get hurt. We need the New York Times to be better, because the New York Times still does set the agenda. And they only got like 11 million subscribers, which is why those headlines are like so important. Like the weird headlines about the toolbox, that headline will be seen by probably three times as many people as read the piece.
Yeah.
Right. Like those are those are the things. And I couldn't agree with you more. The New York Times are not the bad guys, but they aren't the heroes we need, you know, and they need to be. And that is the source of my agita with the Times. But again, my agita with the Times cannot dictate like my willingness to go and just like stand at the barricades with them. Because when one of us is attacked by authoritarianism, we all are.
Yeah. And when we're attacked by authoritarianism, I would like the New York Times to stand with us.
Well, sure, I'd like that, but I don't. I just assume they won't. Maybe I'll be pleasantly surprised.
Why?
Do they even know we exist?
Listen,
no, I'm serious about
okay,
this.
Okay, you want to have some real talk? You know what, guys? We're going to take it behind the paywall, and I'm going to say something to JVL that he needs to hear.